This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Streets turn to violent rivers, houses flood, even in desert areas. Social media is filled with apocalyptic scenes of extreme rainfall this year. In the first week of September, Hong Kong recorded its heaviest hourly rainfall on record, with 158 millimeters, that's 6.2 inches, between 11 p.m. and midnight. Epic rains fell in Spain, Greece, Turkey, Bulgaria, Brazil, and oh yes, Burning Man. But is it all due to global warming? Andrew King is senior lecturer in climate science at the University of Melbourne. He says climate change isn't always to blame for extreme rainfall. Andrew led a new paper in Nature Geoscience to explore what is and is not happening here. From Melbourne, Australia, Andrew King, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks for having me on, Alex.
Why did you and your Australian colleagues investigate the drivers of extreme rains and floods and how we talk about them?
Well, it's important for us to understand the role of climate change in different types of extreme weather events. There's a tendency these days for us to kind of automatically link any kind of extreme weather to climate change. But we know, of course, that before we were influencing the atmosphere through our greenhouse gas emissions, we were already seeing extreme weather events. It's not always climate change that's to blame. For heat extremes, we have a really clear trend. We know that human-caused climate change is exacerbating heat waves across the world, both on land and in the ocean. But for extreme rain events, it's a much more complicated link.
Talk to us about the nasty floods in eastern Australia in 2022. What happened there?
So we saw really heavy rainfall and bad flooding actually repeatedly over the last few years in Australia. Ever since kind of late 2020, we've had generally quite wet conditions across Australia. Not so much the last few months, but we had 2 to 3 years where it was consistently quite wet. And we had some really very wet spells, including in early 2022, when we had really exceptional rainfall and lots of records broken along the east coast of Australia. So really around Sydney and Brisbane particularly. So we saw very heavy rainfall over several days and very severe flooding that did result in fatalities and lots of infrastructure damage, very high insurance costs. And this was not long before a federal election in Australia. So there was great interest in this event and the government's response to this event, but also the government's action on climate change.
And did you end up concluding that that flooding was due mainly to climate change or due to other causes?
So with this event, we determined it's most likely due to other causes, really. We had a La Nina at the same time, and during La Nina events, so La Nina is when we have colder than normal ocean conditions in the central and eastern Pacific and warmer than normal conditions in the west Pacific. And because the warmer than normal sea temperatures are nearer Australia, that means there's kind of the conditions for rainfall to occur more easily in eastern Australia. So there's more moisture in the air and more frequent low pressure systems. We typically see wetter than normal conditions during La Niñas in Australia, and we think that that was the main driver. But also we had quite a bit of bad luck, I think. We had weather systems that kind of stalled over eastern Australia and basically caused persistent rain for several days. And we don't think that climate change is really, well, we don't fully understand the climate change effect on those weather system patterns. Climate change probably played a small role in the event, but it wasn't a primary driver by any means.
Well, that's interesting because for years we've been given the maxim that for every degree of warming, the atmosphere can hold about 7% more moisture. And that's a huge amount of water transferred from the ocean or the land or the ice fields up into the sky. How can that extra load of airborne water not be a factor in pretty well every extreme rain event?
So we have different types of extreme rain events. We have extreme rain that occurs over an hour or two that causes flash flooding, and we have extreme rain events that last many hours or days and tends to cause river flooding. So the kind of more persistent heavy rain causes longer-term or larger-scale floods. And certainly the effects of warming the atmosphere and it being able to hold more moisture is really important. We know that this is the case, and we can observe, especially for short-duration extreme rain events, that this is a really important effect in intensifying those kind of torrential downpours. So when we have, over most of the planet, we see intensification of extreme rain events on timescales of minutes and hours. But for extreme rainfall that occurs over several days, the biggest factor is having weather systems in place for a very long time that deliver extreme rainfall. The other part of the ingredient for extreme rainfall beyond the moisture is having low pressure, having rising air that has to condense and precipitate out rainfall. And we don't really fully understand the climate change effect on these weather systems. We think it's regionally variable. So in some parts of the world, we think climate change is intensifying these low-pressure systems and making them more frequent. But in eastern Australia, if anything, we might think that they're slightly decreasing in occurrence. So that means we might have kind of two contrasting effects, where climate change is increasing the amount of moisture available to be precipitated out, but might be decreasing kind of the propensity of the air to actually rise and cause extreme rain in some parts of the world. And this is really important for these kind of longer duration extreme rain events like we saw in eastern Australia last year.
Well, this reminds me, too, of storms like Hurricane Harvey in 2017. It just sort of sat over Texas and rained for days. And we can contrast that with a recent event here in North America. Hurricane Idalia roared over Florida in the southeast, and there were big storm surges, there were heavy winds, but there wasn't a lot of flooding. And I think that's because it moves so fast compared to storms like Harvey. So are we talking about the ability to rain, but then we're also talking about the speed of the weather system that's involved?
Absolutely. Yeah, but when weather systems move on very quickly, we tend to see shorter-term floods and maybe not as bad flooding. But when we have weather systems that stall over a region, you can get really bad flooding. And indeed, that is what happened with Hurricane Harvey. With the Hurricane Harvey event, which saw really bad flooding over Houston in Texas, we do think that climate change exacerbated that event. So there have been studies that have explored this event, and it does look like climate change increased the amount of precipitation from Hurricane Harvey. But in other cases, it's less clear, especially for the kind of mid-latitude low-pressure systems that affect regions a bit further away from the equator. And their persistence is kind of a bit harder to see a climate change signal in many areas.
Andrew, can you talk to us about one of your new 2023 papers, Climate Change Emergence Over People's Lifetimes? It sounds intriguing. What's it about?
So that paper is quite different from looking at extreme rainfall. This was about looking at warming that has occurred over people's lifetimes across the planet. So we can look at, well, kind of how perceptible warming has been over different parts of the world for different people. And generally, the longer someone has been alive, the more likely they are to have seen a clear signal of climate change, of local warming over their lifetimes. So generally, we see that the clearest warming occurs over equatorial regions for a given period of time. So if we look at, say, the last 50 years or the last 100 years, and we look at how clear is the local warming trend relative to just the variability in the climate, we see a really clear warming trend over tropical regions. But if we actually look at people's life experiences, because it tends to be that people in mid to high latitude areas are a bit older, so these are regions of the global north particularly. That's in contrast to in equatorial regions, which are typically in the global south, and we see much younger population demographics. the actual perceptibility of warming is roughly even between these different populations, because it's a younger population in tropical regions and an older population in mid to high latitude regions, typically.
That's kind of strange in a way. I mean, you would think that older people would really realize the climate has changed, but I don't see a lot of climate acceptance in North America, for example. It's hard to say, but then you take a country like Iran or any in the Middle East where more than half the population are below the age of 25. They're really young, so they haven't experienced perhaps as much, but then again, it's been record hot in Iran. I guess they do know something's happening. It's very confusing how we would apply this on a social level and understand who does and doesn't understand climate change.
Indeed. Yeah, this is something I'm interested in, but I'm not a social scientist at all and probably need to work with a social scientist on this. I mean, we know that younger people generally are more concerned about climate change, and it might be more to do with education rather than experience. So older people, you know, during their schooling were less likely to hear about climate change because it was less of a problem, you know, a few decades ago, whereas younger people tend to be more aware of the problem of climate change. I think that might be kind of overriding this general issue of different experiences of climate change.
That makes sense. You know, you can have disasters in Australia, and Americans, Canadians, we don't hear very much about it. I long for media to become truly global because I don't see how we can tackle issues like climate until the public feels we are all part of one planet. Your thoughts about that?
I completely agree. And I would say, I would kind of go a bit further than that and say that we really don't hear much about extreme weather events in the global south. Typically, at least in Australia, we're more likely to hear about extreme weather events in North America or Europe than we are to hear about the ones that affect parts of Africa or South or East Asia. And we know in general that the impact of extreme weather events are very different in different parts of the world. When we have a hurricane affecting the US, we typically don't see that many fatalities, but we see really large economic costs. When we have a tropical cyclone affecting a less developed region of the world, there's much more fatalities usually, many more fatalities, and lower economic damage. So I find it quite alarming how little we hear about extreme weather events that can kill hundreds of people in the global south. You know, they have huge impacts, and this is on regions of the world which are less resilient to extreme weather, less able to adapt and, you know, respond to extreme weather events. Yeah, the impacts are really much worse overall in these regions, but we don't hear about them.
Although that can change somewhat. I notice India's record on dealing with extreme weather events. They have really reduced the death rates, and Bangladesh has been doing not too bad too. But in general, I totally hear what you're saying. We're going to have to wrap this up. Is there anything else you would like to tell our listeners?
Mainly that we're in the middle of a bit of a crisis in that we have record high greenhouse gas emissions globally. So we're warming the planet at a record high rate. And even though there's all this talk about reaching net zero emissions and decarbonizing, greening our economy and society, we're a long way from doing that yet. We need to rapidly turn this around if we're going to tackle, really kind of limit global warming and reduce the impacts of climate change generally. So the next two or three decades are really, really critical, and we need to see really rapid changes.
From the University of Melbourne, we've been speaking with Dr. Andrew King, Senior Lecturer in Climate Science. You can find links to the news and science we talked about in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Andrew, thank you for sharing your time with us.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.